Blog Talk Radio.
Segment. We had some technical problems. I think we'll play that right now because it's very important. This conflict in the Middle East between Israel and primarily Hamas is very relevant, and it goes back to World War I, where Arthur Balfour, the British Foreign Secretary, made a deal with the Zionists at the time that if they supported the Allies, Britain from Russia, that the Jews or the Zionists would get a homeland in what was known at the time as Palestine. Of course, the other was Colonel T. Lawrence, who was an Arabic specialist who worked with the Arabs to overthrow the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was known as the Sick Old Man of Europe, and to get them out of the Middle East, and that would be become the homeland for the Palestinians and the Arabs, but there was conflict. And so Balfour Declaration is very controversial, and I think we're going to play that right now if I can find it, and then we'll get to Patrick Butler and the relevance of what's really happening in Chicago. We keep hearing about all this gun violence. There was one incident yesterday where the happened in a office building, high-rise, where a disgruntled employee, this is the headline, shot the CEO, and I haven't been able to follow up on it. But usually you hear about recently blacks and Latinos shooting each other or people getting caught in a crossfire in Chicago. It's not like the old days of Al Capone when the mob was, the Italians were fighting with the Irish for control of illegal liquor. This is quite different. But first of all, we'll play this Balfour declaration since we promised it.
Palestine was once part of the mighty Ottoman Empire, but by 1923 the territory is administered by the British under a mandate from the League of Nations. 6 years earlier, in what becomes known as the Balfour Declaration, the British government make it clear they're in favor of Jews establishing their own homeland within Palestine. Thousands of displaced Jews now start flooding back to Palestine from around the world. And together with those already living there, they're clamoring for the restoration of the ancient Kingdom of Israel, with the city of Jerusalem at its heart. But the growing tide of Jews infuriates the Arabs. They regard Palestine as theirs by right and will do anything they can to prevent it being taken over. So they begin a campaign to drive the Jews out, attacking their outlying villages and communal settlements known as kibbutzes. The Jews fight back, forming a militant group called the Haganah to protect themselves. However, by 1939, it's not just the Arabs who are worried about the ever-increasing number of immigrant Jews. So too are the British. Now, much to the delight of the Arabs, but the bitter resentment of Jews, the British introduce a strict quota system. This will still be in force at the end of World War II in 1945, when huge numbers of Jews, having suffered terribly at the hands of the Nazis during the war, particularly in Eastern Europe, start making their way to the Holy Land. However, the British are still determined to keep the numbers down, attracting worldwide criticism as they turn back ships crowded with desperate immigrants. But by 1948, they can see no point in trying to hang on to a country where they appear to be hated by Jews and Arabs in equal measure. So the British pull out, leaving the Jews to declare Israel as a separate state in May 1948. Now the resentment of the Palestinian Arabs boils over, and the violence between the two factions reaches new heights. However, by the late 1950s, a group of young Palestinian Arabs working in Kuwait realize that a new coordinated approach is needed in the continuing battle against Israel. They form an organization called Fatah, and its sole purpose is the liberation of Palestine through armed struggle. By 1963, the fledgling organization known as Fatah, which opens its first office in Algiers, is attracting the attention of various Arab governments eager to see Palestine established as a separate, self-governing state. However, not all of them are happy with Fatah's rising prominence, and early in 1964, Egypt, together with a number of other Arab states, agrees to fund a new movement, the Palestine Liberation Organization, better known as the PLO. According to its manifesto, the main aim of the PLO is to attain the objective of liquidating Israel. Egypt's president, Colonel Gamal Nasser, the prime mover behind the PLO, now seeks to downplay Fatah's role in the struggle. But Fatah carries on regardless, setting up a number of terrorist camps on the West Bank, controlled at the time by Jordan. From here, they mount a series of guerrilla attacks on outlying Israeli settlements. Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli chief of staff, severely criticizes what he sees as Jordan's apparent indifference to Fatah terror gangs operating out of their territory. But he's ignored, and the raids continue. Fatah is now also sending its guerrillas into Israel from Syria, a country which regards itself in a permanent state of war with Israel. This alarms the Soviet Union, which, although no friend of Israel, privately warns Syria through the Soviet ambassador to Damascus to restrain Fatah. While the Soviets are happy to support Fatah by offering training facilities, they don't want the situation in the Middle East becoming any more volatile than it is already. But by the summer of 1967, following repeated border clashes with Syria and faced with thousands of Egyptian troops taking up position in the Sinai, previously occupied by Israel, the Israeli government has had enough. In the early hours of June the 5th, Israel goes to war against Egypt, Syria and Jordan. 6 days later, it's over, with the Israelis inflicting a series of crushing defeats on their Arab neighbors. But this doesn't stop Fatah. If anything, they become even more aggressive.
Now, I think this is relevant too. We're going to play Patrick Butler's we both saw this in 1967. It's relevant again today. So we'll play what the young Jews then went to the Israeli consulate to try to get visas to go to Israel to fight against the Arabs. But the war was over within 6 days, and I remember it well. I was dating a Jewish girl at the time, and I think this is really important. So we'll play it again. Let's see, where is it? I have a little problem here. Okay, the Jews, here we go. Patrick and the Jews. Oh, I thought we had this. Well, a little problem here. Among the other things that are going on is there's an update in the Leland Yee case here in San Francisco. I was involved in exposing political corruption involving federal funds, voter fraud, pedophiles, that sort of thing. And we did quite a bit of documentation from 1984 through 2006, I think it was. Anyway, we haven't said anything much about this, but it's all documented, and we're going to bring it up pretty soon because people are waiting to see put up or shut up. Now, Pat Butler has been around for about 50 years and a great Illinois journalist. He's an author of two books, and he just we discussed in an interview last week why there is the worst gun violence in Chicago since the days of Al Capone. Now, I'll give you just a brief idea. Now, in the old days, when the Italian mafia was fighting the Irish Bugs Moran and Al Capone conflict, unless people got caught in a crossfire, there were sanctioned hits, such as the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. That generally, the mob didn't go around just indiscriminately shooting. There was discipline, and people presumably know how to shoot, although they did shoot up restaurants. Deb, I'm on the show. Anyway, what was I going to say? Now we hear a lot about violence in Chicago, and it's indiscriminate shooting and people getting caught in a crossfire, primarily blacks. And, of course, what's going on is that we're seeing more headlines at violence in Chicago. But out here in California, if you look at San Jose, which is 50 miles south of San Francisco, every day there is one of three things happening: hit and run, stabbings, people getting shot, primarily Latinos. But it's happening also in Oakland and in Antioch and to an extent in San Francisco. So it isn't only Chicago. So what we're going to do, if I can find this thing, we're still having some technical problems. I don't know what to do, why we're having this problem. But Pat Butler, we did discuss this, and we're going to play this interview. We've had so many interviews, and I think it's quite relevant that we get into this discussion, because there is this business of if we have gun control, there'll be less violence or no violence, and that doesn't work either, because the gangsters and the thugs are always going to get the guns. MS-13 is always going to get the guns. So we will continue with our research on this, and hopefully, people realize that individuals are going to be individuals, and that's just the way it is. So, you're not going to change people. Look at what's happening in the Middle East. Hamas is using civilians as shields to cover up their terrorism. There's certainly some extremists on the Israeli side. But one thing is not been discussed is that the other Arab countries don't want Hamas because they're trouble. And there's always going to be these fights between these groups. It's just something we're going to have to deal with. I don't know what happened to my Pat Butler interview. I thought we had it here, but for some reason it disappeared. I don't know what's going on with this. But anyway, also go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUS. We've got an update on American military history, where there's this escort carrier, what was an escort carrier from World War II, berthed here in San Francisco and came across it by accident. There were about 122 of these carriers built, and there were two that were constructed on the Great Lakes, one from a paddle steamer, and this was used to train aviators so they could be transferred with some skills to the big carriers like the Enterprise, Saratoga, and that in World War II and in the Pacific. And after the war, they got rid of, after the end of World War II, they got rid of these. So we now have this one, what looks like an escort carrier here, berthed here in San Francisco. Now, the other, most people know about the USS Hornet, which is berthed permanently over at the former Alameda Naval Air Station in Contra Costa County across the bay. And, of course, you can visit that. But you can't visit this other one. So you go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS. We're going to have to replay Pat. I don't know what happened to his interview. So we'll probably play that Monday, and I'm going to cut this short. I'm still haven't recovered from this cold. So here we go. We're going to try. Well, we might do Butler on corruption. And let me see, because this is very relevant. I don't know what's going on with this damn system. It should have been here, but we keep losing interviews. I don't know. This is really weird. Let me see. We're going to try one more time to find it. And we spent a lot of time trying to put these things together. Oh, here we go. Butler's background on gang violence in Chicago.
What?
For what?
With all these murders, you know, gun violence.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I can tell you very simply. In the old days, the gangs had centralized authority.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the Black Peace Stones, and you had the Insane Unknowns and groups like that.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hierarchy.
Uh-huh.
You didn't go around shooting people unless it had been an approved shooting. Furthermore, you did not do it in such a way that you were going to bring heat on the shooting by shooting somebody who didn't need to be shot.
That's interesting.
That's not true today.
So it's what is an OK Corral situation?
Well, here's what happened. The old hierarchical situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had a chain of command,
mm-hmm.
there was discipline,
mm-hmm.
just gone. Now you've got, it's like after the fall of Rome when you had all of these little
mm-hmm.
satraps that started afterwards, and you had everyone who thought he was a warlord, you know, could get up 20 followers, and then he was a gang leader. They were operating on their own, and there, you know, you got a lot of wild cards. So you've got all of these shootings. They're done by people who are not under any centralized control.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sanctioned shootings,
mm-hmm.
and consequently, a lot of people who do not need to get shot are getting shot.
Are caught in the crossfire.
They're caught in the crossfire. Furthermore,
mm-hmm.
you got some of these guys that are doing the shootings. They don't know how to shoot.
Oh, and they hit innocent people.
Some of the gangs in the old days at
mm-hmm.
least required their people to know how to shoot.
Something to be said for the old mafia.
That's right, but it wasn't just the mafia. It mm-hmm. was the black gangs and the
mm-hmm.
Italian gangs that weren't mafia, some of the other gangs,
mm-hmm.
and they operated under some semblance of discipline.
No, it's
that's
almost like
happening.
The prison.
That's why you've got these shootings that are getting out of hand.
Ah,
and
now,
you can't sit down. The police can't call in the gang leaders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and read the Riot Act.
And read them the Riot Act because they don't control the situation anymore. It's not like the old days when
mm-hmm.
you knew who to talk to.
Right.
This is why World War II was a lot easier than the war on terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
We knew the address. People who were giving us problems, and we knew how to get messages to them that they doesn't do this anymore. In this particular case, just like we have with the war on terrorism, you got about 50 or 60 different groups that you're dealing with, and you know we don't always know who the players are.
Got you.
That's why this nuttiness.
We will have part two of this long interview. We'll be discussing the update on Governor Blagojevich, or the ex-governor, who's in federal prison, and also the radical gays and the politicians who we think are in the closet want to allow gays to donate blood. Put it in the hospital blood supply system again, and we've already been through this. This is how people came down with HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis. before, and the origin of this Green Cross, which was started by the Japanese doctor Major Ishii, who was the Mangala of the Japanese Army, who operated in Mukden, Manchuria, and he did horrible medical procedures, if you can call that, on Chinese, Russians, American POWs, and he got away with it. At the end of World War II, he burned what records he could, and the rest he made an offer to the U.S. Army that they'd give him immunity, he turned over his records. So he went back to Japan and came up with this idea of blood banks and started this Green Cross. Now, the Green Cross in Ireland, I understand, is a pharmacy, but they're not pushing blood, you can be sure of that. We're going to, because there's been this technical problem, we're going to end with our politics and poker and see if we can get this resolved. And we'll be back Monday at 3:30 and Central Pacific Standard Time. Also, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We also have an update on pit bulls here in Northern California. Pit bulls are now becoming the new guard dog, and also, if you're into military history, little things that you don't hear about. Again, we'll be talking about the U.S. Navy's escort carriers, one of which is believed to be here in San Francisco. So we'll end with politics poker.
Which is more important?
Paratrades.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
I'll say. Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Say, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
Whoa.